you lived your life like you want your life to be? Did you pass the blame, get lost on a runaway train?
Hello and welcome to the Privileged Man podcast. My name is Esben Baring and I'm your host. On this podcast, you're going to hear about the experiences of men and women who became aware of and found ways to break free from the molds of expectation, to live their lives adventurously and truthfully, and discover their true selves along the way. These sovereign souls are sharing the insights they had that led them to be unapologetically who they are. These conversations are rich with moments of realization, transformation, and insight that can inspire the willingness to look at your life in new and refreshing ways. My guest today is Max Remington Hobbs. Max is a coach and human behavior specialist with a particular focus on how experiences in childhood create unconscious beliefs that drive behavior and produce unwanted outcomes. He guides people to wake up to their unconscious programming, connect with their true vision, and develop the practices and structures to bring that vision to life. Max works with people from many different walks of life, including founders, coaches, innovators, thought leaders, professional sportsmen, international artists, and parents. He facilitates immersions for individuals, teams, and leading global organizations.
Max, welcome to the Privileged Man podcast. It's great to see you again.
Awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. We had the good fortune to catch up, I guess it was about 4 or 5 weeks ago now, after perhaps 20 years of not seeing one another. And we explored some pretty interesting topics. I'd love to hear a little bit about how you got to where you are today, living in South Africa, married to Jenny, and what you guys are doing with Skyland and that work, and perhaps a little bit of the story that led up to you guys founding Skyland and the work that you're doing to bring some transformation and change to people looking to evolve.
Sure. Well, it's nice talking to you about this because, you know, there's not too many occasions where I get to speak to people who have that shared context of old life and new life, you know? And, you know, reflecting on the old life, and you'll understand the old life. And my journey over the last 20 odd years has been one of kind of, I guess, waking up from a deep sleep, you know, a deep sleep that we're all born into in a way.
Let's talk about the deep sleep. Let's talk about, you know, the deep sleep that you were dreaming, and what happened when you woke up. Where were you asleep, and what happened when you woke up?
Well, this is the thing that I've come to learn over the last few years that's really been like kind of the most amazing realization of my life so far. And of course, there've been many amazing realizations, but this realization that, I don't know if you connect with this, but we all got this sense that when we were young, you know, we were so free and ourselves, you know, there was Max, there was Badger doing our fun things, just playing, being ourselves, being free, being children, being innocent. And then at some point that changed. And when I talk about going to sleep, that's kind of what I mean, is when I stopped being myself. I stopped being a free spirit who didn't really care about what other people thought, who was having fun, who was living joyfully. And I became somebody else. And what I've come to realize in recent years, which is kind of like the most fantastic and the most shocking thing that we're not taught it when we're young, is that the way human beings develop, and people have known this for thousands of years, you know, ancient philosophers and wisdom keepers have known this for thousands of years, is that we're born kind of at one with everything. You know, you're born into life, and neuroscience shows us now that when you're born, a baby doesn't perceive any difference between himself and herself and their environment. And then over time, that changes. And what's changing is the development of an identity. Mm. And that's really the going to sleep. And it's unavoidable in the human condition. We're all born as babies. We spend our first few years free and wonderful. Anyone who has kids gets to see their own kids looking like that. And then at some point, that changes when we develop an identity and we develop an ego. And that's a necessary part of the human journey. But the current kind of crazy paradigm that we live in at the moment is we've forgotten that that's actually what's happening. So we don't realize we've forgotten the ancient wisdom that would hold us to account and make us remember that the human journey is one of being born into innocence, being yourself, going to sleep, going into your identity, developing your identity, and then waking up from that and coming back to yourself. And when you come back to yourself, you come back to yourself with wisdom, and come back to your heart, come back to your true nature. And I think certainly me for many, many years, and I'm still very much waking up from that deep sleep myself, but most of us aren't in a position that we even know that that's what's happening. You know, we don't realize that we are living out of a pale imitation of who we really are, disconnected from, you want to call it your true nature, you want to call it your heart, you want to call it your soul, whatever it is that works for you, your essence. We don't realize that that's the life we're living out. And the symptoms that we experience, you know, be it depression or various mental health diseases, or just that general apathetic feeling that so many people have of just, what is going on? Like, this just feels pointless. This just feels meaningless and empty.
I love Ram Dass did a documentary called Becoming Nobody. And he talks about how we spend these formative years after the ego is formed, I guess up to 7 years old, in our schooling systems, being taught to become somebody, to go out in the world and become an identity, to go and do all these great things. And that looks, I guess, very different to very different people. And then a point in life arrives where something new is seen, some transformation experience happens, whether it's near death, whether it's psychedelic, whether it's extreme crisis, heartbreak, financial hardship, and something changes. And it feels to me like the embers that were always there are suddenly fanned a little bit and a flame sparks into life. And for me, when that happened, it was like, well, that's the way I've got to look. But look in the opposite direction and realize that I'm not the mistaken identity that I've been trying to adhere to my whole life. And as you say, the life of that exploration is ongoing and ongoing. Mine really happened at 27 years old. You know, people often speak about these moments where these great shining lights, great shining stars of entertainment and music and art, they go through these huge crisis moments and they commit suicide or they overdose. And mine was much less intense. Mine was as an investment banker in the back of a cab on the way home at 11 o'clock at night, sobbing my eyes out, realizing that my life was pointless. I couldn't keep on going with this abject misery of living a life like a dehumanized automaton. And there had to be more. I mean, that's what I remember saying. There has to be more to life than the way I'm living it. And that declaration, in a way, moved my life in a different direction. So I called up my old man and I burst into tears. I was like, there has to be another way of living like this, because at the time I was kind of following in my old man's footsteps, going to the city of London, becoming a banker, thinking that making money would somehow make me happy, but making money was making me miserable. There was nothing about making money that was in any sense joyful, alive, nourishing, enriching. It really wasn't. It was miserable for me. So what's got you here? I mean, you've followed a similar path to me in the sense of your education and university, and then you went out of university and you became a corporate man.
Yeah, so I guess there's two tracks to my story. One is my love story with Jenny, my wife, who got together when we were 20, 21 at university. And have been together ever since, through sort of multiple, I guess, iterations of a of a relationship. And that's really been the thing that's been the greatest gift for me, the greatest anchor, the greatest vehicle for love, understanding, transformation, waking up. And through that, sort of through that container, I've been taught so much by Jenny. I mean, we were at university, we left university living the sort of typical sheltered life. I was a corporate lawyer, she was a doctor, living in London, doing what we meant to do, you know, part of the scene, ticking all the right boxes, going to the right events, being seen with the right people, and sort of very much living that, I guess, the life that was mapped out for us, given the background that we came from. And when we got married, when we were 26, and when we were 28, Jenny got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Mm. And that was kind of like the start of a journey of waking up to something, that there's something, might be something different going on around us from what I was really seeing. And Jenny's healing journey basically took her from all the way from, she's a doctor. So like when she first got sick, she was pursuing all of the typical medical routes to deal with multiple sclerosis, which is, you know, a supposedly incurable disease. And she went through all of the normal medical paradigms. She went, you know, to treatments for MS. None of those worked. We ended up moving to America for some time in 2010, 2011, where she had a stem cell transplant, which is an amazing piece of scientific, incredible procedure that she had. And she was in quarantine for months and months. And kind of none of that worked really from a sort of medical perspective. And she just got sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker. And I was sitting there watching this amazing being, who had this, I mean, if you know Jane, she's got sort of incredible life force, and that life force was just sort of slipping away as her physical health deteriorated and her mental health deteriorated, and she just lost this energy. And it reached the point where she was just like, I can't keep pushing this way of trying to heal myself using the sort of traditional Western allopathic approach to curing diseases. You know, there's a disease and there's a cure and there's a solution, go and take it. She ended up checking herself out of hospital, where she was having another round of chemotherapy. I don't remember which round number, 4 or 5 of chemotherapy, and just saying, look, I need a time out. And she took herself back home to South Africa, where she was born, to an old-fashioned kind of like healthcare retreat space run by this amazing Austrian mystic called Mrs. Cowley, who's no longer with us. And she spent some months there, and it took her down a rabbit hole of starting to look at this idea that, hold on, maybe it's not how I've previously thought it. Maybe what's going on in my body is a symptom about what's going on in my consciousness. Maybe how I'm thinking about life and I'm thinking about myself is being reflected back to me in my physical conditions and in my symptoms. And that was a kind of radical, it was certainly a very, very radical thing for me to contemplate, coming from the perspective and the understanding that I had. And she took herself off down this amazing path of effectively neuroplasticity. So asking herself, she did some work with a teacher and basically spent months and months and months asking herself, okay, what is this disease that is debilitating me, that is taking me, that has like taken away my physical health, my ability to be able to function properly? I mean, by that stage, she was really struggling to walk, struggling to function for long periods of time. What is this disease giving me? Why am I grateful for it? Why did I create it? And what would I have lost out on if I hadn't got it? And at the start of it, she was like, God, no, this is ridiculous. There's nothing good that's come out of this. This is terrible. It's the worst thing ever. Like, oh, it's just the most awful thing ever. And over time, she just worked away, because she was basically like, I don't have another option. I'm just going to go for this now because nothing else is working. And I remember after about 3 months of doing it, she called me. I was in London, and she called me, and she in floods of tears. She said, "Darling, I wouldn't change this. I wouldn't change this. I'm so grateful for this experience." And about a week later, her symptoms went away. And it was just like, I was like, what the heck? What is going on here? You know, what is going on here? Just blew my mind, blew my understanding of so many different facets of the human condition that this could possibly happen. And, you know, from there, Jenny went right down the rabbit hole, right down the rabbit hole. And I was kind of like, I was going, this is amazing. Wow, look at you. I'm so happy, but still very much clinging on to my old paradigm of thinking, and not really wanting to, not having a need to, and not wanting to let go. And eventually it got to the stage in our relationship where it was, you know, Jenny was off on her path, and it had really just opened up something completely new and amazing for her, miraculous for her. And I was like, it was either really, are you gonna come, or are you gonna stay? And I was like, no, I'm gonna stay. I'm staying. I can't give this up. I'm not giving it up. I'm not giving up my identity. No. And you know, like all good things, like things have to destroy in order for new things to be birthed. And I think that was definitely, it was probably the end of the first phase of our relationship. So someone once said that relationships and unions and marriages go in cycles of sort of 7 years or so. And that was definitely like, it was an end of one thing and a start of something new. And it kind of sort of disintegrated and something new birthed. And ever since then, I've just been on a crazy mad venture to try and understand what the heck's going on. You know, what are we doing here? What is going on with our mind, and how is it that our mind seems to be creating our reality?
I love it. Thurman, thanks for sharing that story. It's profound. Yeah. To imagine being called by your wife to be in floods of tears of gratitude for the experience of her MS. It touches something very deep in me when I consider my diabetes, the type 1 diabetes I've had since I was 19 years old. But more so for me, it's around the mental and emotional struggle that I've experienced most of my life. I now see that without that struggle, I wouldn't have chosen the path that I have, which is left field, as far as like anyone who knows me from back home or my family. It's totally left field. And oftentimes people don't understand how left field it is. And it's so outside of the paradigm of thinking that they are operating from, that level of relatability is lost. So when you say that you were grasping onto this old paradigm of thought, how did that look for you as you made that transition and change to join Jenny on her way? Who were you at that point? What reality were you living in? And what did you see as you went down your own rabbit hole?
Well, the reality I was living in was a, you know, from the outside, corporate man. By that stage, I was doing private equity in London, and the sort of inner reality for me was one that was very much focused on, I need to succeed, and success looks like, you know, I need to make a success of my career. And if I don't make a success of my career, kind of like the implicit assumption is that my life's a failure, basically, that I've amounted to nothing. Mm-hmm. And that was very much to do with the particular type of identity and belief system that I that I had and I have. And I've come to realize over the years that we all have these different identities and these different belief systems to do with our conditioning, to do with our programming from when we're younger. And mine was incredibly, incredibly image conscious, incredibly yeah. like worried about what everyone else thinks about me, you know. How's Max coming across? What's so and so thinking about me? And making sure the right people think the right things about me, and of course, completely oblivious to that dynamic within myself, because it's all unconscious, and that's the nature of how our mind works. You know, so this idea that we have this identity, and you know, for me, my identity was just completely consuming by what other people thought about me. But I had no idea that that was what was happening, of course, because you don't know. It's unconscious within you. And I think that the most powerful thing that happened to me in my life was waking up to this dynamic, to waking up and starting to see, oh my goodness, like my entire kind of like everything that I'm doing in my life is built on this edifice of kind of needing to do things, needing to succeed, needing to be recognized, needing to be seen in a certain way by other people, because fundamentally I have a belief about myself that I'm not good enough. And waking up to that dynamic, which is something that I'm still waking up to because it's pervasive, it sits behind, you know, all of my thoughts, has been, I guess that's kind of my biggest aha moment in my life so far. And what it's enabled me to do, and the great gift of it, is that, and you'll know this from your journey, is like when you start to wake up to the nonsense of the ego and the nonsense of our identity, and you start to just observe, oh my goodness, that's what it's up to. That's what I'm up to. Okay. I see you. I see your tricks. I see what you're up to. When you start to do that, you start to create a separation and a distance between your identity, which is the thing that you've been invested in. Certainly in my case, was invested in for, you know, a good 30 years. That's a long time, a lot of ingrained thinking there. You start to create a separation between that identity and yourself. And then you're suddenly like, well, if I'm not my identity, which it seems to be I'm not, because that seems to be some sort of crazy mask and persona that I've created. If I'm not that, then who am I? And that's kind of like, I think that's the most exciting part of it, is like, well, coming back into some sort of connection and relationship with the real you, that boy or that girl who used to run free when they were young and had a spirit and had an essence, and starting to come back into connection with that part of yourself, and the joy and fulfillment that can bring to your life.
Yeah, and I think of that inner child, the inner badger, actually is my spiritual self, in the sense of, use words like joy and playfulness and creativity and spontaneity and fun. You know, for me, is the moment I started to think that I had to take my life seriously is the moment that I lost that. And that for me happened. That for me happened at some point around 9 or 10 years old, when there was still this reckless sense of play and fun. But then, hang on a second, there were things called exams, entrance exams, that one had to get a little bit more serious about, because there were consequences to the next rite of passage in life, to the next school you went to, you didn't go to. So suddenly there was this element of seriousness. And I look back on my own life and I see it's a long series of serious events in my life that I had to become serious about. And I'm quite an intense individual, and I take myself and life quite seriously still sometimes. And my beautiful partner just elbows me sometimes. She says, just lighten up, man. She just says, slow down and have a bit more fun. And as soon as I do that, my consciousness relaxes and I become more just naturally playful. And, you know, when you speak of that separation from identity, my process of separation was quite terrifying at points, because it has felt like aspects of my psychological self have been dying. And when I hear you talk about the belief of, like, I'm not enough, or I'm a failure. I've started to reframe these in a really interesting way, which is it's true. I am not enough. The way I've been living my life is not a bloody enough, because the way I've been living my life is forcing myself in a tiny little box, and it isn't enough. And however much I accrue materially, or however much my status is perceived as being wonderful, it's got nothing to do with that. And so I look at it now as like, my life was a failure because I wasn't following my own true path. And I'm still, you know, being in this conversation with you is me stepping into following my own true path to see where it goes, because it feels good. But it doesn't come without a sense of trust and faith, because there isn't a clearly laid out path anymore. I'm making it up as I go along now, and I'm trying to be flexible within that to see what opportunities might arise for me. Because the moment that I think I've got a path, I'm excluding any other possibilities into my life. So it can be frightening at times, and yet I'm finding that with the boldness to look in this direction, aid is coming my way, whether that be in the next conversation, the next person reaches out to me, the next client I work with, the next retreat I think about creating. There's a path there if I'm willing to let it be there.
Yeah, well, there's a funny thing that happens, isn't it? Where when we let go of the way we think it has to be, and we get into a much more of a joyful, playful path, and we're like, well, this is kind of my intention about where I want things to go. I don't know how it's going to happen. You know, who the hell knows? But like, I'm putting out my intention as to what I'd love to create, what I'd love to experience. And I'm just surrendering to how that might unfold, you know, surrendering to the river of life. It's funny how things start to come across your path that help you along the way. You know, whereas like most of us are like, we're certainly, I was for so many years, you know, I need to be in this fixed way. This is the way that it needs to be. This is the way that I need to behave. This is the way that I need to conduct my life and, you know, be successful and be a family man and all that type of stuff. It's all kind of mapped out, you know, and the fun and the spontaneity and the joy of, well, I don't know how it's going to go. You know, I've got this intention, but who the hell knows how it's going to go? All that sort of falls away when you're, you know, living that more sort of structured and, I guess you're living a path that is fixated on your identity rather than what it is that your heart seeks to experience and enjoy.
And what is your heart seeking to experience and enjoy as the man sitting in front of me now in this conversation with what you're doing with Skyland, with who you are as a husband, with who you are as a father? What brings you joy?
Well, I think that life is the most extraordinary like experience. And I think I'm just becoming more and more of a kid as I grow older, trying to appreciate that and not take it all too seriously. So what we spend our lives trying to do is how can we enjoy and how can we experience and how can we celebrate this blessed opportunity, which is just being alive and being here, having this conversation with you, having fun with my family. And then on the sort of inverted commas work side, you know, in what way can we help people to wake up to their own particular identities, and come through that and come back to themselves, come back to their true nature. And that's basically the work that we're involved in. So you mentioned Skyland, which we do, which is a sort of annual gathering for people to come together and have a sort of purposeful play for a few days of celebration, but with a very much a transformational structure and flow to it. But the main work that Jenny and I do is in our business, which is called AHA Project, which is just taking people through transformational journeys of waking up to their identities and coming back into connection with them, with themselves, with their hearts, with what it is that they want to do. And I think we're at the start of such an incredible period. I don't know how you're seeing this, but like I think we're only a couple of years into the kind of online digital learning and development like revolution, where you can find amazing people and amazing experiences online that you can do from the sort of comfort of your own home, wherever you are in the world, that you can integrate into your normal life, and you can have an experience where you can, I mean, with us, we do a 10 week transformation experience where people go on a journey where they really wake up to themselves. They wake up to their stories. They wake up to their identities, and they come through that. And this is only just, and you know, COVID's had a lot of challenges for many people, but one of the benefits is that we've kind of all got used to this weird online world, this weird sort of Zoom Teams world, you know, but so many people who wouldn't have been kind of prepared or in a position to sort of think about doing this type of work and now used to this format and this way of human engagement.
Yeah.
And that presents a fantastic opportunity to develop experiences that really give people the opportunity to wake up in a without having to go to like an ashram for a year, you know, right, or like go on a vision quest for a month or something. And right. So yeah, that's what takes up most of our time at the moment.
Beautiful. And so for anyone who's listening to this conversation, that process that you and Jenny run, how does it look? And what are some of the internal experiences that people go through when they're being facilitated by you and Jenny? Because what I hear you say in all of this is, what has been my experience is the most rewarding experiences of any part of my life today is when I'm in connection, when I'm fully in connection with myself, when I'm deeply in connection with the person that I'm in a conversation with, whether it's you on this podcast, whether it's with my daughter or my partner, or whether it's around the fire with a group of men. It's creating the space for connection to naturally occur. Now that can be guided and facilitated very gently, and then a safe space can be created for individuals to start speaking to aspects of themselves that may have been lying hidden deeply below all these layers of creation of falsehood, I might like to call it, these ideas of who we think we should be in order to fit into the world. And invariably in these experiences that I'm creating with these other men is that there is an emotional expression as something deeper comes through, whether it's the discomfort of shame and fear of being seen perhaps for the first time and having one's own inner thoughts shared in a space where they're fully accepted without judgment. And then the realization that there's that nod of empathy and love and support when you've offered something that you may have feared complete and utter ridicule for. Or so through the shame and through a little bit of fear, and then to find that there's a deeper sadness that is there to be expressed, which has been pushed down for so long, I guess in some way, shape or form, because we've been hiding the true aspects of ourselves so long behind these masks and in these costumes. And then that palpable sense of relief and laughter and lightness for having unburdened ourselves of these thought forms that we think that no one else thinks, but everyone is thinking. So to have these conversations where we expose ourselves, I was having a conversation with Jamie Catter the other day about this, by being willing to expose ourselves. And I call it coming out the closet. And for me growing up, coming out the closet meant a homosexual man admitting that he was gay for the first time. But I think the world and society has moved on from that point now where there's this call for us all to come out of the closet. And the coming out of the closet is really what I see is freeing the true self to express itself through us and offer our gifts to the world. So, you know, how would you respond to anything that I've just shared about, you know, how you and Jenny work and the facilitation and what kind of experiences your clients have when they work with you or they come to Skyland, just to see if there are points of similarity here?
Lots of similarity. I mean, you know, I think you spoke about connection there, and ultimately, you know, that's the work that we do is about helping people to reconnect with themselves first and foremost, and then reconnect with the people in their lives, and that reconnection comes from, you know, certainly in the work that we do, from, I mean, none of, and this is the amazing thing, none of this stuff is new. You know, we've known this wisdom for thousands and thousands of years, and at the heart of the wisdom, which is what, you know, the ancient Greeks would say, and many of them, Aristotle said that knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. Or, you know, the Delphic oracle, know thyself, one of the three maxims of the Delphic oracle. And for us, really, that's our foundation, is helping people, taking people on a guided journey to wake up to themselves, to wake up to their identities. And we do it in small groups of men. I lead groups of men. Jenny leads groups of women, in very safe journeys, very safe containers. And it's an experience of waking up to your identity, how you created it when you were young, how it shows up in your life, how you behave in ways that reinforce it. So that you really just come into, like, it's like taking off a mask. Like, you imagine, like, you're wearing a mask your whole life, maybe you're wearing a mask for 30 years, and then you start to, like, the mask starts to come off, and you start to, oh shit, okay, that's my mask. And you're doing it in a group in a container with a small number of other men or women who are all waking up to their own masks. Right. And you get to see, oh, that's Badger's mask, that's Max's mask, and that's so-and-so's mask. And actually, there are only a very few amount of human masks. You know, there's maybe 9, 10, 11, 12 different types of human personas, you know? And we've all got them. We wake up to them and we see, oh, shit, that's our crazy mask, you know? Wowzers. And after we've woken up to our mask and our identities, and we kind of taken the sting out of them, we sort of woken up to the matrix and, like, had this hold that these personas have on us, then the magic happens. Because then it's then you can start to really come home to yourself, that connection that you spoke about, that connection with your heart. And then it's the real fun. Okay, so now I've come home to myself from this space, when I really connect in with my imagination, that imagination that we all used to have when we were little, when I connect in with that part of myself, what would I love to really create and express in the remaining years, decades I've got on this planet? And how can I go around manifesting it?
It's so interesting. You know, my God, have I read books? My God, have I watched documentaries? My God, have I listened to podcasts around law of attraction and manifestation and creating our own reality? And mostly in my own experiences, what really held me back from being able to reconnect with that playfulness, that childishness, that joy, that literally that is like, without being able to feel through the lies and the discomfort. And when I say lies and discomfort, for me, it manifested in these labels around emotions like grief, shame, guilt, and fear. So for me, if I'm trying to create from a fearful place, or if I'm trying to create from a guilty place, or I'm trying to create from a shameful place, I'm only going to create more of these experiences. So I've been resisting and repressing all of these feelings for a very, very long time in my life. And it was very difficult for me to answer the question, well, what do I truly want? Because I couldn't connect with the joy to even imagine having a life that I'd really love to experience. So for me, it was a process of going through this and coming back into the safety of my body to give myself then the permission to even imagine having a life that I would truly love to live. And I also feel that part of the insanity of the way society is structured through these thought forms does not encourage healthy self-expression and freely expressed gifts. And it's kind of pushed out of us. And I don't know, you know, this sense of being controlled or doing as we're told or living into these different ideas and aspects of ourselves. The way society is structured it seems to me it doesn't encourage that. And so I'm reflecting and thinking back to my own boyhood and my own schooling. And I'm like, well, what would happen if we created these containers where it was encouraged for people to learn what it is to fully be a human before they go out and really do the human aspect? So to choose and understand who we truly are and then go into the world and create from a place of being rather than a box-checking exercise of, Max, you go do that. Badge, you go and do this. And all these other little soldiers go and do that. And then we end up just looking and questioning the point to our existence. So for me, it's been a journey into understanding the fullness of the human experience without putting too many labels on it. But, you know, the metaphor for the masks for me have been taking off shame, taking off fear, taking off guilt, taking off some of the sadness to allow the joy to come through. And in it's connection. And this word vulnerability, like, how do you know vulnerability? What does vulnerability mean to you, Max?
Vulnerability means to me that it's when you wake up to what your particular identity is, particularly certain types of identities, they are extremely, extremely defended against being vulnerable. Kind of like the mask believes, because each identity kind of is like, it's like a little animal. It's got its own little weird belief system. And many of the several very, very, very powerful masks, which have a huge amount of impact on the world through political leaders or business leaders, they assume that vulnerability, that if they're vulnerable, they're going to be kind of overpowered. And so they develop this really kind of like strongman identity and persona that like assumes that if I'm vulnerable and if I show weakness, I'm going to be overrun. And of course, the truth is completely the opposite. And that the path home for many people is through vulnerability, is through openness, is through weakness. And you get to realize that there's a huge strength and solace and comfort actually in true vulnerability, quite the opposite of what you unconsciously believed before you went on this journey of waking up. My view on vulnerability is that and I think you and I talked about this a little bit when we spoke before, it's for certain people, vulnerability is the way home. Is the way home.
It has been for me.
Given my identity, it's more about authenticity. So it's more about being myself and not being so worried about how I come across and just being comfortable being myself, which is, sounds like a similar thing to vulnerability, but it's a slightly different flavor to it.
How?
And that's why...
I'm curious about that. How?
Because vulnerability is inherent to vulnerability is the willingness to express weakness and go there, right? Whereas authenticity is more around being okay expressing where you are at any given moment truthfully and honestly, whether that's weakness or joy or something else, right? And that's why it's so important, in my experience, it's so important. And you mentioned structures and what's going on in the world and the crazy system that we live in. It's so important to know yourself, know your particular type of identity, know your particular type of mask, because we're not all the same. You know, I'll have a different mask to what you do. And a different way through that. And that's why like it's so important to actually go on a journey to wake up to what is your own particular identity.
Yeah, I found, I've found that vulnerability has led me to my authenticity. So when I was going through a really, really dark depression it was 3.5 years ago it started, and it probably started to dissipate about 9 months ago. But I was very intentionally going through a healing process to remove what I now see is to remove these false selves, these survival traits that I picked up of living in a family and society to protect myself. And I just had this sense, well, as I'm going to mature from a boyhood psychology into a healthy masculinity and a healthy manhood, I may have to go through and be vulnerable enough to admit my despair, to admit how pathetic I can feel at times, to be with my apathy, to admit that I hated myself at times, so much so that I couldn't admit that to myself, and so I would project that onto other people. And so for me, the vulnerability, and the weird thing was, is that I felt called to post all this stuff on Instagram as I was going through it, as sort of a reminder to myself of what it meant to be like a man willing to feel the fullness of his feelings. My God, it was uncomfortable. When I started doing this, I would set up the camera and I would start the video and stop the videos 5 or 6 times. I'd do the live, I'd delete the live, I'd do it again. Fuck, it was a torturous experience, and I was challenged to do it by my coach, Jamie Smart, because it was a necessary process for me to realize that I could do it, to realize I had the muscle of courage. And the muscle of courage and the willingness to be vulnerable has allowed me to start to identify with a more authentic self that exists within me. But I had to go, so my masks were these feelings that were stopping me. And I'd put words and beliefs around the feelings that I didn't want to feel. So I had to come through the limiting beliefs by feeling the feelings to set myself free. Because people are going to like me. I mean, there's a lot of people that I don't like. So why would I not think that people might not like me too? There's also a lot of people that I really love and respect. And so there's going to be people that love and respect me too. And I remember my coach saying, you know, he said, if you're ever going to start speaking up in public and be public facing in any way, people are going to criticize you, people are going to dislike you, so you might as well get used to it. I just howled with laughter. I was like, of course that's right. Who am I trying to kid? But having been a people pleaser and an approval seeker my whole life, that was impossible, because what happens when people don't like me? Well, the fact is, they wouldn't be liking me for a false self, and that's what I was so afraid of. So it was like this egoic idea of falseness that people might see behind. So I was like, well, fuck it, let's just rip this thing off. Let's let people see behind the mask there. And then I realized that people loved me behind the mask. And then I started to become more and more confident that there was a being worthy of love behind the masks. And that's, I guess, where a lot of my freedom is coming from.
And then you even realized that actually the people who really know me have always loved me for the real me anyway. I thought that they just were loving me for my identity and, like, you know, the sort of polished veneer that I was expressing and I was presenting. But actually, they actually love me because of who I am, and that's a very healing realization.
Yeah, very healing. Can you think of your most vulnerable moment? Can you remember a vulnerable moment that you might be willing to share here?
Gosh, I mean, so many. I had a very recent vulnerable moment, actually. I got COVID badly. When was it? When COVID was first doing its stuff, I got COVID really badly, and having been quite blasé about it, you know. I got sick, and it took me into a really, really, really low place. Really, really low place. And kind of like, you know, when you just get stripped bare physically, if anyone who's had COVID, I'm sure they'll appreciate, like, COVID is a weird new thing. It's like it affects us and it certainly affected me physically in a way that other stuff hadn't. And it really, really, really depleted me. It was like it stripped away so much of my normal, like, everyday protection mechanisms. And I was just left with myself. I was in bed for like 4 weeks and, or 3 weeks. And the middle part of it, which was really, really just the sort of lowest part, I hit a depression that I don't think I've ever experienced, being that low, totally and utterly empty. And it all came to the surface around, like, well, I'm going to, you know, I could die. This is because this is what the mind does. You know, I thought, well, I'm faced with mortality and I've done nothing with my life. I'm a nobody. right into the heart of my identity, right into the heart of my belief system that I'm not good enough. And that, gosh, if I die now, who is Max Reinhardt? It's a complete waste of time. He hasn't done nothing with his life. He's an absolute nobody. And this just sort of, this without the protection of physical vitality, this just erupted to the surface. And you know, I was very fortunate as ever just to have Jenny and my daughter. I had a huge sort of, I remember just crying on Jenny for like an hour one night, just floods it all come out, just like, oh gosh, I've never experienced that type of, I guess, shame about my own lack of worth and who I am and what I do. And of course that sharing and that vulnerability and then that connection that it created from it, and that depth that it took it, you know, like it always does, it takes you to a new layer of connection, first of all with yourself and then with people around you. And it was actually, if I look back on it now, such an important part of my own growth and understanding about myself. And if I hadn't had it, I would be, honestly, I would, there are things that have happened afterwards that I wouldn't have been able to experience or go to myself had I not had that experience.
I love that. I thank you so much for sharing that. I had goosebumps all over my body as you shared that. And when I'm sitting here hearing you share this story, and I'm like, what a blessing. What a blessing that was to deplete your physical vitality, to force you to be vulnerable, to force you. So all the naturally protective instinctual masks that you could put on to avoid going into that place were not able to exist in that moment. And, you know, touching on that my life has been pointless. I'm a complete and utter failure. I'm worthless. That, to me, seems to be a gateway to spirit. You know, that utter worthlessness, that complete and utter dejection, apathy. Life is pointless. And then, boom. Boom. Yeah, that's touching, man. Thanks for sharing that. And, you know, I really love being in this type of conversation, because we can put words around these experiences, but these are energies and emotions that we don't want to feel. And we don't want to feel them because we don't want ever to be seen that way, I guess. But for me, I remember Jim Carrey talking about, you know, the depression he went through, and he'd grown that big bushy beard and he'd come out the other side, and he was speaking from such a place of, for me anyway, it just touched me to my core. And this is a man who's made however many tens of millions of dollars through his acting. And for him to come through that depression and also experience that same sense of total and utter worthlessness, and just the other side of it was a rebirth, touches me, because it's universal. It doesn't matter how much we've got, how much we've achieved, anything. It's just a dying to the full self so something can be reborn. So thank you.
Pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
And it's in, and you know, I think now, coming back to what you were saying just before about, you know, the structures that we live in, you know, now more than ever, it's like we need to be going to these places in ourselves. We need to be going through these experiences of waking up and transformation. Sometimes it doesn't have to be, you know, totally. Doesn't have to be complete. The wheels don't have to come completely off. You know, you can do it in a more contained manner. But like, we have a deep issue at the moment with levels of unconsciousness, particularly among our political and business culture at the moment. And unfortunately, we've got a lot of people who are kind of in positions of power and authority who don't know themselves, you know, and who are kind of like projecting out the worst elements of their identity onto their world, often in positions of great power. I mean, you and I went to you went to a very privileged school that boasts 21 British prime ministers. But if we're honest about how quite a lot of them have done, we might say not that well, and we might say the present incumbent one is struggling in that regard as well. And one of the major reasons why he's struggling is because he's completely unconscious as to who on earth he is. And that's a microcosm. It's a microcosm for what's going on across many levels of society at the moment. And you know, we all have our particular lens and filter, but our lens and filter at the moment, Jenny and I's lens and filter at the moment, is helping people to wake up. Because when people wake up to their identities and come home to themselves, they naturally and effortlessly do things that are joyful and kind and fun and in service of each other and in service of the planet and looking after nature, looking after the environment, because they're not desperately seeking to overpower or be seen or to consume, because that monster has been awoken, brought into the light, seen for what it is, given a pat on the back and said, they're there.
Exactly. I love it. I'm completely on the same mission as you. And it's so simple. And yet it seems like such a majorly courageous first step to take to come and do any work on ourselves, right? And, you know, what you shared just then about your experience with COVID, there's nothing that we as healthily grown adults cannot feel. Our feelings won't kill us. And there is a sense of joy and connection and service and love that lies the other side of it. And for anyone that's listening and whose interest may be piqued, take the step. Take the step. Come and see us. Go and see Max and Jenny. Have an experience that will potentially change your life, your family's life, your community's life forever. And it's the most rewarding path that I've ever taken in my life. And it's uncharted. It's totally uncharted. So I get to chart it as I go. And my hope is that the path that I chart will give my children the opportunity to chart their own path. So I'm walking my own so that they can walk their own. There's no need for them to fall into line with who or what I think I know, because who am I to tell them anything? I'm just figuring a little bit about myself out at 44 years old. And it's a privilege and honor and a blessing that I found myself on this path. But who am I to tell these sweet, beautiful souls that are coming up behind us about how to live their life? I'd rather let them go their own way and figure that out themselves. Thanks, man. It's been really good to see you again.
You too, man. You too. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for the chance to chat.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
You lived your life like you want your life to be. Did you pass the blame, get lost on a runaway train?
The Privileged Man is a men's movement that we founded in 2021. To create safe and connected spaces for men to gather and remember how to speak the courageous language of their hearts to live more sovereign and truthful lives. Men are reclaiming the power to choose their way of being, guided by their innate wisdom in the place of societal dictates. A brotherhood of consciously connected men is forming, and we welcome you to join us. If you'd like to learn more about the brotherhood, please visit theprivilegedman.com, and we look forward to welcoming you.